Hello and welcome to Viewpoints. My name is Boris Asai and I'll be with you for the next half hour. On today's show, in British Columbia, the Kootenay Insurrection for Safe Supply says it bought drugs off the dark web as a statement in support of safe supply of drugs.
It's gone on for too long, and we need to find solutions that are going to turn this crisis around.
Queen's University Snow Lab receives $102 million for its research on dark matter and neutrino particles.
Our whole galaxy is surrounded by a halo of dark matter, so it's constantly going through us. And so we have a bunch of experiments trying to detect that dark matter that's in this halo around our galaxy.
Dalhousie University researchers just received a $4.8 million grant in their efforts to battle a very invasive and fatal brain cancer.
This is kind of a new technology where you can essentially obliterate tissue with an ultrasound pulse. The real advantage is that it's possible that you could actually cure an uncurable cancer.
And through our Periscope this week, we'll take a peek of what's been going on in BC, Sutton, Quebec, and Sackville, New Brunswick. Nice to have you with us.
Hi, I'm Kareem Mosna in Kingston, Ontario. You are tuned to Viewpoints. Listen to all our stories online at canada-info.ca and follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI.
So we start things off out west, where local harm reduction advocates working for the Kootenay Insurrection for Safe Supply in British Columbia have been handing out illegal street drugs to known users. They feel it was an act of compassion and a statement in support of safe drug supply. Dylan Griffith, the founder of the Kootenay Insurrection for Safe Supply, says that his organization received 6 grams of cocaine, methamphetamine, and heroin from the Vancouver-based drug user Liberation Front. Griffith says that he bought the drugs off the dark web from criminal networks during a recent vigil for victims of the toxic drug crisis. Griffith adds, "We don't want to do that, but there's no safe supply in BC, and the government is leaving us no choice." And they're not the only ones. 14 other community organizations in the province received similar packages for distribution to users. The next step, according to Griffith, is to establish compassion clubs in the Kootenays and to continue distributing a tested supply of drugs to users. In late July, Health Canada rejected an application from Dolph to establish a similar concept in Vancouver. Dolph said it will appeal the decision. More on this with reporter John Rune in Nelson, British Columbia.
Wednesday afternoon in Cottonwood Falls Park in Nelson, a small crowd gathered to grieve for the thousands of lives lost in BC's toxic drug crisis. This summer, a shocking count showed that close to 1,100 people in the province died during the first 6 months of 2022. Officials say it's a record in the first half of a year. The crisis is heavily driven by a tainted drug supply. Earlier this week, Interior Health warned that a bad batch of drugs might be in circulation in the Kootenays, but for some, the warning came too late. Advocates say 7 people have died in the Nelson and Castlegar area in the last 6 weeks.
It's gone on for too long, and we need to find solutions that are going to turn this crisis around.
That is Cheryl Dowden talking. She's the executive director of local outreach group Anchors. They manage 2 overdose prevention sites in Nelson, but Dowden says they're having a tough time keeping the lights on and have to scramble each year. And their site can't accommodate those who consume drugs like meth or crack through inhaling. They have tried finding a place for a permanent site in Trail, but finding a landlord willing to house them has been hard, so they have to just do a pop-up 2 days per week.
It's not one simple solution, it's a really complex issue. So we need, services like naloxone and overdose prevention sites and, inhalation sites and safer supply. We need, treatment, and we need treatment access in our communities. We run a support recovery program where people can stay up to 6 months, detox. We need more, we need residential treatment in our area.
Meanwhile, people are dying in the streets, leaving empty seats at the table. In Cottonwood Falls Park, a purple chair was standing empty next to the speakers during the whole ceremony. It was Tiffany Teal who put it there. She's a coordinator with the Rural Empowered Drug Users Network, REDUN for short. Teal came to the group's meetings when she was dealing with her own addiction. Now she wants to help others. But there are a lot of things making that a really hard job for her.
Failed policies. Failed policies, toxic drugs.
No, it's not unbalanced. It's worse.
Loss of life. Loss of loved ones, empty chairs, like the purple chair up there.
The BC government decided earlier this year to scrap criminal penalties for small user amounts of drugs. That law will take effect next year. A step in the right direction, said one of Anchor's community coordinators, Alex Shurstobidov. But there's a major problem with policymakers, he says. They aren't listening directly to the people who are currently swept up in the crisis or those who know it well. He is trying to change that.
We're just trying to have the voice heard of the people on the streets, right? We want to be at the tables when they're talking about services that are going to be made for us or to help us or whatever. So we need to have our voices at those tables. If we don't have those voices, and for years and years and years, we have, people with master's degrees and doctor's degrees and so on telling us this is what you need to do. We know best what to do, and we want to engage with people and bring that out and let people know that these are the gaps. This is what's wrong. This is what's right.
Those hoping to speak to Nelson's local policymakers about their reality had to leave the event disappointed. For the entire afternoon, there was no sight of Mayor John Dooley or local councillors, and no one from the regional district at the vigil. The only politician in sight was MLA Brittany Anderson, who said Wednesday was about mourning those lost to the crisis and to keep up the work to stop the deaths. Reporting in Nelson, John Roon.
Follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI. Listen to all our news online at canada-info.ca.
SnowLab, a Queen's University research company based near Sudbury, specializing in astroparticle research, will receive $102 million over the next 6 years from the Canada Foundation for Innovation Major Sciences Initiative Program. SnowLab researchers focus on dark matter and the neutrino particle. SnowLab Executive Director and Professor of Physics at Queen's University, Dr. Jody Cooley, says dark matter research is focused on trying to identify 85% of the missing mass in the universe. The funding from the Canada Foundation for Innovation will support SnowLab's large scope of current and future research experiments in Kingston, Ontario. Karim Musna had a chat with Dr. Jody Cooley.
The dark matter is all around us in a halo. And by us, I mean like our whole galaxy is surrounded by a halo of dark matter. So it's constantly going through us. And so we have a bunch of experiments trying to detect that dark matter that's in this halo around our galaxy. The other sort of set of physics experiments that we have going on are these things called neutrinoless double beta decay. And basically, that's like trying to understand better radiation and radioactivity. Neutrinoless double beta decay is one type of radiation that you can get, radioactivity that you can get. And we're hoping to learn more about a particle called the neutrino through studying this process, which again, helps us also understand better radioactivity. In addition, we also have experiments going on in biology underground. I don't know if you knew this or not, but we have a set of experiments that are trying to understand how radiation affects like cell development. So we know that if you get too much radiation, that's bad for you, right? It can cause cancer and things like this. We know that radiation has played some role in the development of our species, because even on the surface of the Earth, we get radiation from the cosmic rays that are raining down on us all the time. the environment underground gives us actually a unique opportunity to study what does radiation, how would too little radiation affect cell development, which is kind of neat.
Some very fascinating stuff that I'm sure would be a whole other form of discussion. But let's get back to the Canadian Foundation for Innovation Award. I mean, $100 million is pretty significant. I'd like to know a bit more about where this funding will go towards. I understand it's supporting astroparticle research. Tell me a bit about what you hope to do with this significant amount of funding.
Absolutely. So this is an amount of funding that we will get over 6 years. So we're not getting it all at once. It is a longer term duration of which we will spend the money over. But essentially, you know, we talk generally about the types of experiments that we have going on. And so actually in our lab, not only do we have these experiments going on, but the experiments are at different stages. So we have some experiments that are running right now, that they're up, they're taking data, and they need scientific and technical support to stay operating and stay operating stably. So we have some people and some of the money goes to supporting those experiments. We have another set of experiments that are sort of the next generation, and these are experiments that essentially are under construction. And so they're not yet to the point where they're taking data, but they're being constructed. And so we have engineers, scientists, technicians of various levels who work on those experiments and work to help those experimentalists construct their experiments. And then we have like another set of experiments that we're planning for out in the future. These experiments are longer on the longer time horizon. And those experiments are sort of like we call next generation experiments. And so what we do for them is we help them to do some of their pre-planning of what do they need or what would it take for them to go into space underground. And we develop some of the support structure for receiving those experiments, you know, when it's time for them to come. And so it's a long variety of things. I mean, it's just a large, you know, it's sort of a large scope of different types of experiments at different stages that we support here at SNOLAB.
A point that the Minister of Innovation with Science and Industry with the Government of Canada, François-Philippe Champagne, made in his announcement of this funding is making sure Canada is equipped to support the next generation of researchers. Is that a big part of this, you know, in terms of perhaps students, recent graduates finding opportunities through SNOLAB?
Absolutely. We host at any time something like 30 undergraduate students here at SNOLAB. And so these are our students who apply through a process, and then they spend some time with us at SNOLAB. And, you know, the students that we get, you know, changes over, I think it's about every 4 or 6 months. So we get new students who come in. Some of them stay a little bit longer and will work multiple terms. We just finished up our summer term with undergraduate students. We also support and host students who are either working on their graduate degrees, so they're working on master's or PhD degrees, and faculty, you know, from all over Canada and actually from all over the world. A lot of the experiments that we have underground are actually international efforts. They're too expensive for Canada to afford on its own. And so we work on trying to solve some of these puzzles with international collaborators who bring you know, money, and they bring people into the Sudbury region as well.
That was Dr. Judy Cooley speaking with Karim Musna in Kingston, Ontario. SNOLAB is one of the 14 Canadian institutions who will receive funding from the Canada Foundation for Innovation Major Sciences Initiative Program. Queen's Canadian Cancer Trials Group will receive $20 million.
Hi, I'm Sarah Gouda in Halifax, Nova Scotia. You are tuned to Viewpoints. Listen to all our stories online at canada-info.ca and follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI.
In In other research news, we turn to Nova Scotia, where Dalhousie University researchers just received a $4.8 million grant in their efforts to battle a very invasive and always fatal brain cancer. The Dalhousie research team is trying to find more effective ways to treat cancer tumors using a new focused ultrasound technique. The university research team will be receiving $700,000 each year over a span of 5 years from the Canadian Institutes of Health Research. The funds will be going towards Dalhousie's latest research technology that aims to obliterate glioblastoma cancer tissue with a new ultrasound pulse technique. Glioblastoma is a malignant, deadly, aggressive, and fast type of cancer that affects the brain or spine, and this new therapy treatment could actually cure non-curable cancer, says Dalhousie University professor Jeremy Brown, who heads the research group. He's with Saraguda in Halifax, Nova Scotia.
This is kind of a new technology where you can essentially obliterate tissue with an ultrasound pulse. You convert it into gas bubbles just by applying enough focused pressure on a point. And then so the tissue turns into gas bubbles. And then when it collapses, it just turns into tissue fragments. This is a very new type of tissue ablation. And of course, our target is to obliterate tumors, not healthy tissue. So the advantage of this technology is that you can not only very, very precisely target tissues from far away from your probe, but you can obliterate them in a way that is very beneficial. And the major benefits are there's no heating involved. So it's a mechanical process. So the tumor tissue just kind of like, it's like a mechanical blender, just homogenizes the tumor. And then the secondary benefit is that we're, and this is a big focus of our research, the CIHR research project, is that a secondary benefit is that it initiates a very positive immune response. This new ultrasound technology has recently been shown to initiate a much, much stronger immune response. And so the focus of our study is to use this brain tumor model, obliterate, you know, some of the tumor tissue, and then track what the immune response is to ablating these brain tumors with ultrasound, this new ultrasound technology. And nobody's ever done this before with this type of tumor, so it'll be... And because the brain has a very isolated immune system, it'll be really, really interesting to see how the immune system responds to this type of tumor ablation. When you ablate a tumor and it initiates this immune response, because the tumor debris is you know, showing the body that there's something there that it should be attacking, the tumor itself actually tries to block that immune response. This type of immunotherapy, which are, they're called checkpoint inhibitors, they actually try to stop the body from stopping the immune response. In a nutshell, that's how it works. And these checkpoint inhibitors work much better when you initiate that immune response.
That's so interesting. And you said that you're doing this for the first time, because when I think of cancer treatments, I think of chemotherapy, radiation, and these all have mild to severe side effects. I guess, will this have any side effects? And if so, what are they?
Yes. So definitely these checkpoint inhibitors have side effects associated with them. So basically like I said, you're sort of telling the body to stop blocking the immune system's response. And so what happens is you can trigger these sort of autoimmune responses, which can be quite severe in some cases, depending on the patient. But essentially, you're amplifying the immune system so much that your body starts attacking, you know, healthy tissue as well. The brain tumor that we're targeting is glioblastoma. It's a type of cancer that's universally fatal. The standard of care is to go in, we resect the tumor. The surgeon will surgically remove it the best they can. And then they follow up that treatment with something like chemotherapy or radiation. But 100% of the time, the tumor comes back. Essentially has a 5-year survival rate of about 0%. This tumor is really just an extremely deadly tumor. It's aggressive, it's fast, and time is of the essence to debulk it as soon as you find out you have one. And it's a really terrible cancer, and it's actually very prominent in children and younger adults as well.
If your research proves successful, people may not need to do surgery or use chemotherapy as a form? So it's kind of a replacement to it?
The technology we're developing is really still a surgical approach. So you would go in and still surgically remove the tumor. But if you surgically remove it with this type of ultrasound ablation instead of what the technology they use now is, and then combine it with the immunotherapy, the real advantage is that it's possible that you could actually cure an uncurable cancer is the idea. But beyond that, if we get really positive results in the research where we combine the immunotherapy with the ultrasound ablation, you could potentially do it non-invasively. So you could ablate a little bit of the tumor from outside the skull. You're never going to get all of it with that external approach. But as long as you can initiate that immune response and then combine it with an immunotherapy, it is possible that you could do it without surgery. You know, the graduate students that I recruit are unbelievable, like world class, you know, among the best in this field in the world. When they go present their research, people around the world are blown away. And most are recruited from Dalhousie in Nova Scotia. So I would say that a common misconception is that, you know, you got to go to MIT or, you know, or Harvard or Caltech to get these world-class students. But no, we get them right here at Dalhousie.
Hi, I'm Pamela Hassan in Smithers, BC, and you are listening to Viewpoints.
And it's time for a Periscope, a quick peek at some of the stories produced by our journalists all over the country. We first learned from Erica Butler, a journalist based in New Brunswick, that the Sackville Town Council will be installing 32 solar panels on the roof of its Bill Johnstone Memorial Park building. It will spend $25,000 from their Climate Initiatives project to install the panels. Here's Special Projects Manager Kieran Miller, followed by City Councillor Bill Evans.
So this would supply 72% of the building's annual electricity. Based on the electricity consumption of the building, the savings in the first year are estimated to be $1,786, and that will continue to increase as utility rates rise. Over the panel's lifespan, the installation will eliminate 315 tons of carbon dioxide from entering the atmosphere, which would be the equivalent of burning 121,625 liters of gasoline.
By a quick mental calculation, this is going to pay for itself within about half the expected lifetime of the material. After that time, it's going to be saving us money. So we're going to spend money now, and over the lifetime of these panels, we will have a net saving equal to about the same amount of money.
Journalist Megan Dooling reports that the new bivalent COVID-19 vaccine was approved by Health Canada on September 1st. The latest COVID-19 vaccine will soon be available in BC for adults 18 and older. The vaccine contains two proteins from different strains of the virus that causes COVID-19. Here's BC's provincial health officer, Dr. Bonnie Henry.
So this is a form of combination vaccine that has the spike protein in it, not just for the original Wuhan variant, but also for an Omicron variant. With vaccination and with hybrid immunity, we now know that there are far fewer people in our community now today who are at risk of severe illness from COVID. And we have tools now to top up immunity for those people who are still at risk, and that includes the newest approved bivalent vaccine booster.
British Columbians registered for vaccinations will get an invitation to book an appointment for their next shot in the coming weeks, Henry said. Immunity levels against COVID-19 in BC are currently good. That's because a relatively high number of British Columbians have received three doses of the vaccine, 67% of those eligible. The town of Sutton, Quebec is experiencing a spike of acts of vandalism, so much so that it needed to implement an action plan. Over the last month, vandals have targeted most areas of the village, including Park Goyette Hill, the natural spring site, and commercial buildings as well. Taylor McClure interviews the town mayor, Robert Benoit.
This is pretty serious, since this is really the first time that there is this number of vandalism in the city. So people are very preoccupied because it started about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and it's been building up lately. We have lots of incidents, and on top of that, we had a series of robberies. So we're really concerned about what is happening right now, so we've taken a lot of steps. Probably every part of the city was touched by that. What's happening right now concerns all of us. We are adding cameras in the parks and in the city hall, around city hall. We've asked the police, the Sûreté du Québec, to be much more present. We have young cadets who are walking around during the night. We've discussed with several intervenants in the city to see how we could better communicate with young people, because we think that part of it is done by young people, at least the painting. So, but we need to do some prevention also.
And small acts of conservation can make a big impact on local Cortes Island ecosystems. Our BC journalist Loni Taylor sat down with Shannon Hogan, the Development Coordinator and Conservation Assistant for Friends of Cortes Island, a nonprofit society mandated to initiate conservation programs on Cortes. The Folky blog is inspiring locals to take tiny steps for surprisingly effective results.
So an example would be a frog pond. And all it took was first fencing off the frog pond so the ducks didn't get in it, and then placing a bunch of pruned fruit tree branches into the pond so that the frogs had things to lay their eggs on. And that's all it took. And now she has a pond full of morphing tadpoles, and there was even a heron spotted fishing in there for the frogs. And that was just from spring to summer.
Wow, just this year.
Yeah.
A whole community of frogs.
Yeah.
And that'll just turn into an orchestra next spring, right?
Exactly, yeah.
These stories and many more on canada-info.ca, canada-info.ca. Please, this edition of Viewpoints, Lots of People to Thank This Week, starting with our journalists, Karen Musna, Sarah Gouda, John Roon, Erica Butler, Taylor McClure, Megan Dooling, Sarah Gouda, and Loni Taylor, National Coordinator Maureen McEwen. Viewpoints is produced by the Community Radio Fund of Canada. My name is Boris Chassaigne. Happy to have you with us. Take care.
Toronto, Ontario. You are tuned to Viewpoints. Listen to all our stories online at canada-info.ca and follow us on Twitter at canada-lgi.